Coach, he scores!
JP Nakota with the Leafs Nation podcast once again, and Danny Gray is here as well. How's it going, Danny?
It's going super well, JP. Just got back from a relaxing vacation with my girlfriend on Manitoulin Island, so I was incommunicado during the free agent frenzy that wasn't. So I'm glad that I spent my time relaxing outside as opposed to glued to Twitter to see that nothing really happened.
Yeah, same. Really, I mean, the Leafs' only real move was to pick up Jay McClement, who... I don't know. On one hand, I think I wish we weren't signing depth players to UFA contracts because you're not going to get great value. And, you know, okay, maybe we're not losing out on a lot of cap space, but that kind of nickel and diming of your cap space adds up after a while, you know, and calls for the need to buy out guys like Colby Armstrong. Which actually, what did you think of Colby Armstrong's buyout?
I think if we're going strictly on a, does this... Is this the best potential move to save the Leafs money? Obviously, no. The best thing to do would have been to try and trade Armstrong. But, I mean, obviously he's not a really valuable asset in a trade. Or demote him to the Marlies, obviously saving us of the cap hit. But I think that the interesting thing there is I think it's a move by Burke that shows, you know, his idea that if guys can play in the NHL. And I think it's clear that Colby Armstrong is an NHL-capable player. He's a lot of things, and he's not a lot of things that we discovered, you know, during his time in Toronto. But he's an NHL player. So I think that Burke, you know, giving him a chance to play with another team, and obviously he moved on to the Canadiens. I think that speaks volumes about the kind of management style that Burke has. It was interesting, actually. I sort of compare it to the way that people sort of criticized Harold Ballard for, you know, dealing with players like nickel and diming them and being really cheap and all those sorts of things. And, you know, famously, the Leafs were mad that, you know, we weren't going to sign Wayne Gretzky because it cost too much money or something like that, obviously. In the past, people have complained that, you know, the Leafs or the franchise put money ahead of, you know, things that would help it win maybe, or saving money. So I think it's an example of the opposite, sort of doing right by a player who had some bad luck in Toronto and probably never really got a fair shake. You know, like they said, the injuries weren't sort of a nagging sort. It was just kind of bad luck. So I like it in the sense that I think other players will see that and appreciate the fact that, you know, Burke's giving Armstrong a chance to play in the NHL next season as opposed to suffering down with the Marlies, which was probably the other option. I'm sure they sort of weighed the two of them, right?
Yeah, well, I guess I'd like to think they did.
Well, yeah. So I would think that instead of, you know, an immediate, or, you know, holding on to Colby and his $3 million for a whole other season and being done with it, you know, they have to pay one more year of a smaller cap. And so I'm okay with it in that sense because I think it gives us more flexibility for this coming season, which is the important thing. And I think it also sends a message to players that that Burke's not necessarily going to bury you in the minors if it turns out that you can't play. So I don't know. I think that sometimes we maybe overestimate and underestimate players' motivations and what's important to them. But I think a move like that shows players that that Burke cares, at least somewhat, about his players, right? Obviously not enough to save Colton or Jeff Finger, but I think obviously the buyout made sense in this circumstance.
Yeah, I mean, it's only $1 million, and I can live with that, I suppose. And I really feel like this is one of those situations that is addition by subtraction, right? Not having Colby Armstrong on the ice is a good thing for Toronto. Putting a guy like Matt Fratton in his place, probably a good move. Maybe it's Jerry DiMico. Maybe it's, you know, whoever. Colby Armstrong was probably below a replacement-level player for the Leafs. And if they can get somebody in his place, then I guess it's a good hockey decision. So I'm fine with it. Anyway, getting back to Jay McClement, I think it's an interesting signing, right? Because, you know, as soon as we hear the deal come through, we think, wait, what the hell? Like, this guy had 17 points. You know, but this isn't solving our issue with center, right? As a matter of fact, we already have several depth centers in Bozak and Steckel. And who am I forgetting?
Connolly.
Well, I guess
Lombardi's technically a center.
I guess I'm not really thinking of Connolly as a depth center because I really think he should probably get another good crack it the first line this year with Kessel.
Right. Yeah, I think so too. I think what's interesting about sort of the McLevin signing is that, you know, on the one hand, Burke freed up a depth spot on the wing, and he didn't go out, you know, and immediately try and fill it with a guy like a Brandon Prust or a Jordan Tutu, you know, who signed sort of longer deals with a higher term. So I think it shows that, you know, he is willing to fill those bottom six roles internally if they feel they have the players that can do it. But from the sounds of it, they felt that they lacked sort of a more defensively oriented, shut down third or fourth line center, right? Obviously, if you remember how much Randy Carlyle loved playing David Steckel towards the end of the year, I think that, and Carlyle's input, because it sounds like, but with the McLennan signing, it seems like they didn't feel they had a center who could play more of a shutdown defensive role within the system. So they, you know, they went looking external. I think they've probably realized we have enough wingers who can do whatever it was that Colby Armstrong was supposed to do. I think generally, you know, jump between the second and third lines, provide a bit of a forecheck, a bit of grit, a bit of, you know, chirpiness, whatever.
You think he's going to jump between the second and fourth lines?
I think that's what they expected, right? You know, if he could fill spot duty on the second line, if someone was injured, obviously.
Oh, you're talking about the expectations of Colby.
The expectations of Colby.
Okay, yeah.
So I think that looking at his replacement, I think Matt Fratton makes sense. Fratton is a guy who I could see, you know, if worst came to worst, you could slot him beside MacArthur and Grabowski and he wouldn't look out of place. Obviously, you wouldn't want that to be the long-term solution, but if, you know, injuries dictated. So I think it's interesting that, yeah, on the one hand, you know, we see McLemmon as a depth signing and it's kind of, oh, well, we could fill that internally. But I think that it just says that, you know, the Leafs don't feel they have that player. And from my perspective, you know, scoring goals last year wasn't the problem for this team, right? Offense wasn't the issue. It was the fact that we couldn't keep pucks out of our net. Now, obviously, part of that is the horrendous, horrendous goaltending that, you know, we were subjected to. But I think the other half of it is that aside from Grabowski and Steckel, really, we didn't have any centers capable of, you know, shutting down or even matching up half decently against not even top competition, but middling or bottom competition. So I know we obviously have now a big surplus of, you know, cromulent centers in between Bozak, Lombardi, Connolly, Steckel, and McLemmon. So I think, you know, one or two of those guys is probably on the way out or being forced to shift a wing, right?
Yeah, likely. I guess I have my reservations about McLemmon. I mean, you know, it's only $1.5 million, so nothing to get too up in arms about.
And what, two years?
Yeah, 2 years. So, you know, whatever. But I guess I'm not convinced that he's a real shutdown guy. I mean, it's true that his zone starts look great, right? He starts something ridiculous, like 35% of all his faceoffs in the offensive zone. So, you know, he's getting really tough starts, and his zone finishes look good. But his Corsi numbers sure don't. And, okay, sure, a lot of that's going to be due to those zone starts. But, you know, it's not like he's turning the play around or anything by starting in the offensive zone, necessarily. The zone starts suggested, but the Corsi numbers don't so much. Looking at his numbers, I guess I'm willing to give this guy a shot, but I'm not expecting big things. Now, on that note, I think that it's sort of an interesting situation for the Leafs in that they were terrible in terms of their shots for and against numbers, and of course terrible in their goaltending. So, okay, even if we could fix the goaltending, we need players that are going to move the puck in the right direction. Now, the thing is, although, you know, the Leafs were, what were they, 10th, I think, in goals for, you know, they were still terrible in terms of puck possession. So I guess, you know, I don't think necessarily that spells a need for defensemen or, you know, necessarily more goal scoring, but we do need more players who can drive possession. And I think that, you know, forwards are a big part of that. Because our forwards are basically crap at puck recovery, and you can tell that even just by watching the game. You don't have to follow advanced stats very closely to realize that. So, you know, if we're adding forwards to fix the possession problem, you know, I think a lot of people get confused and frustrated because, you know, they think, oh, but goals aren't a problem. And I think, well, it's not just the goal scoring that we need to help. It's keeping the puck out of our end, right?
Well, yeah, I think to an extent, some of that is coaching, obviously. When you have a rush team, running gun sort of team that Ron Wilson was trying to coach with, you're going to you're going to forego some of that possession time in the offensive zone. Obviously, the Leafs didn't really work much of a cycle or a dump and chase, really. So I think, you know, it was sort of a one and done sometimes or a quick transition. So that's going to really sort of not look good as far as Corsi goes. Obviously, you want to try and outshoot as often as possible. But I don't know. I think it'd be interesting to see the change that Carlisle makes. I mean, you could look back at the numbers that happened after he came in, but I don't think that's a meaningful sample size. And I don't think that, number one, he had the personnel to operate a system like that. And also, I think trying to make that change at the worst possible time in the season isn't going to sort of show what the team needs. I think, yeah, it's pretty clear that aside from, every team sort of needs everything, really. Nothing's ever perfect and set in stone. But I think that the biggest, sort of the two biggest issues, like you said, identified, number one is goaltending. And number two is more of a puck possession style game, sort of reducing shots against or increasing shots for. And I think that it's hard to sort of identify, it's a chicken and an egg, right? Like most people say, they keep the puck on their stick in the offensive zone. That's just as good as reducing a shot against, right? Because every shot you take is a shot that's not going to, what I'm saying.
Exactly.
So how do you, what's the better way to do that, right? Is it sort of reducing shots against by, getting some checking defensive forwards like a Jay McClement who, might keep the puck out of the net a little bit more, but not get as many shots? I don't know, right? So
yeah, that's sort of what I'm thinking. Like when people say, goal scoring isn't the Leafs' problem, I don't know why they would look to add a winger like James Van Riemsdyk. I think, well, really, maybe their problem isn't just goaltending or goal scoring, it's just keeping the puck out. So if there's a winger out there, and I realize wingers probably have the least effect on, puck possession of all the positions, if there's a player out there who pushes the puck in the right direction, pick him up.
I think that one of the big weaknesses that we saw last season with the team and for the last couple of years is just getting the puck out of the defensive zone. The first pass from the defenseman to the forward on the half wall there is more often than not either picked off or the defenseman will pinch and beat the forward or just basically out muscle him for the puck. And I think, a lot of people sort of, when Burke talks about adding size and toughness, and they say, oh, well, he's talking about truculence and fighting and punching. And I think that sort of misses part of the point. One of the weaknesses definitely is that, our wingers are just too small that consistently they were out muscled for the puck on the wall. And more often than not, it'd result in a turnover. So that's why a lot of the time you saw them going up the middle with it, which is an even worse idea. So I think if we add a couple of bigger wingers, guys that can actually move the puck out of the defensive zone from the wall there, I think that'll really sort of help, move, like you say, move the puck in the right direction and reduce shots against and turnovers as well. I think that was a big weakness with this team. And I think Van Riemsdyk is the sort of guy that can help with that breakout.
Well, I hope so. And I don't think we're going to miss Luke Shen's first pass either.
No, exactly. And again, one of the things is why I like the Morgan Riley pick and the Matt Finn and the sort of the defenseman that Burke's been going after is that more often now you have to either carry the puck out or you have to make, like, you watch the games in the playoffs, you watch the LA Kings, and just the puck's on their stick for a split second, boom, boom, tic-tac, like defenseman forward, out. And, you see the Leafs trying to do that last year, but they just can't execute, right? So the Luke Shen would bobble the puck and make a half-hearted pass, and it would get picked off or, the defenseman would pinch in and beat the forward. So I think that getting players that can actually work that system might help us more so than actually like talking about, shots and that sort of thing or adding goals, like you said. I think that it's pretty clear that Burke doesn't feel he has the right mix of players or the right type of personnel to work the system he wants, right?
Yeah. All right. Moving to a more general topic here, were there any other UFA signings that you sort of raised an eyebrow at, either good or for bad?
That Detroit signed Jordan Tootoo, sort of a guy with some, quote unquote character issues in the past, and a guy who, is a bit of a pest. Obviously, they brought in Todd Bertuzzi, but they sort of reformed him, and I mean, I guess they always have a lot of cheap shot artists on the team, but have this reputation for being clean. So I guess in a way that doesn't surprise me. I think they got pretty good value for a guy who can probably play on their third line pretty well. And it'll look really good in Detroit, right? When you're facing probably really easy minutes. So I like that one. But to be honest, other than the text messages you sent, I didn't really have a sense of who signed where and that sort of thing. So nothing really stood out. I thought it was interesting to see what the Habs did after everyone said how good of a draft they had. They went out and probably added some questionable names and are going to have a pretty expensive third line next year. So that'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting what Winnipeg did, adding Ponikarovsky, who will, I suppose they hope, blossom once again with his old buddy Nick Antropov.
Right, oh yeah, and they added Olli Jokinen.
Olli Jokinen, yeah. I wonder if the Jets are going to be like the Florida Panthers of the West next season.
Well, it seems like they're following that blueprint, although they've given Pavlik an insane amount of money. I was really Montreal locked up Carey Price to a pretty good value contract. I think he's a better goalie than Jonathan Quick, and they got him for less term and a relatively similar cap hit. So I like that contract better than the Quick deal, I think, because I think, like, straight up, Price is the better goalie. So.
I think they were just stupid to give a goalie 10 years. Like, didn't the Luongo contract teach you anything? Like,
I can't think of a worse time to objectively assess your goalie's worth to the franchise than after a Stanley Cup and Conn Smythe spring. Like, it was Jonathan Quick had like the third best ever playoffs that a goaltender's ever had, and they're like, no, now seems like a good deal to hammer out this extension. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, really, eh? No, I think that was totally nuts. I'm trying to think who else sort of made a splash.
I mean, really, we're sitting for the big ones to fall, right? Parise, Suter, Carl, you know, none of these, Alex Semin, you know, none of these guys have gone anywhere, really, so it's hard to say. And I think that the Hudler signing in Calgary was interesting. You know, in a vacuum, it's a good deal, right? You know, Yuri Hudler is capable of being a top six winger, and 4 years at $4 million isn't all that terrible. But when you look at where Calgary is and what, you know, it's sort of like when the Leafs signed Nicholas, you know, having a great player, but was that really the sort of direction that we needed to be going in, right?
Well, I mean, tough example, I suppose, because in retrospect, Hagman turned into Dion Phaneuf. So, you know, it worked out okay because he remained a tradable asset. I guess the Wings are expecting Tutu to replace Hudler, and I don't think that's going to happen. I think Hudler was a pretty solid third line guy, and oof. I just don't see.
I think it'll be really interesting if they miss out on Suter, just what they look like next year.
Can't wait.
I for that reason alone, I really hope that they miss out on Suter, because I think that it was funny. I spent some time over on Winging It in Motown this week, just because of the Hall of Fame thing, and we should address that. We should talk about how awesome Matt Sundin is for a good 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
But I was over there just sort of, you know, because they were saying, oh, well, why Sundin over Shanahan? And, you know, it's evident to us, but they're Wings fans, so they like Brendan Shanahan. But it's funny to see them talk about, you know, the players they have in their system and the defensemen. And I had never heard of any of these players. And not that I'm an expert on all other teams, but I have a general sense of, you know, which teams have good defensive prospects, which teams have a good blue line coming up, which guys are good and young. And it's like, you look at them outside of Lidstrom, and it's what? They just traded Brad Stewart. So right now, Ian White and Erickson are there and Cronwall, like, Cronwall's all right, but he's not gonna replace Nicholas Lidstrom.
No, well, let's face it, nobody is.
No, so I think it's going to be super interesting to see sort of what happens there without him, and that's why I hope they miss out on all the good free agents, so that, you know, maybe they can suck for a while.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, I don't know, it's always tough to sort of evaluate these things because no games have been played, right? And I think, too, I think you have to look at the Van Riemsdyk trade is not part of free agency, but, you know, Burke made a significant addition to the club within about a week. And I think everyone's already sort of forgotten about it. Like, oh, he was so quiet. But it's like he just traded for a top six winger that he was looking for and, you know, on a pretty reasonable contract and probably a better deal than most of these players that have gone UFA are getting, right?
And gave up a pretty serious asset, too. I mean, you know. Well, the Leafs fans are familiar with Luke Shen's terribleness, but the rest of the league isn't so much. And, you know, like, it was a big deal. So, yeah, no, I don't think I'd call Burke quiet. What do you think he still has to do? I mean, goaltending has got to be the...
It's tough because I think he's probably having the same internal monologue that I'm having with this, right? You know, is it worth giving up the assets that Vancouver's going to want? Obviously, Vancouver's asking price for Roberto Luongo sounds, you know, relatively insane.
I think, for the record, I think Gillis has been absolutely Scott Housening / Rick Nashing the value of Luongo. Like, it's just kind of a joke at this point, you know?
Well, if you know, if he doesn't move him, then absolutely. You know, if he's not gone and he comes into training camp, sure. But the idea is that, you know, you go high and see if anyone meets your price, and if they don't, then you readjust. Obviously, they have time and they have space, and they're not looking to make any big moves. They don't need the cap space right now. But yeah, if he stands pat on that, obviously. But you know, a GM might come along and say, okay, well, I'm not giving you your asking price, but here's a pretty good deal that probably is an overpayment anyways, but they feel like they've gotten a good deal because, you know, they lowered him down from his asking price, right? It's like when you go to buy a car and they knock a couple grand off and you think, oh, hey, I got a great deal, yeah. But it's probably over a payment anyways. So I think that, you know, if Gillis said we want, I don't know, this is a, and I hate making trade proposals, but like, you know, Tyler Bozak, Stuart Percy, and, you know, next year's first. Obviously, that's an insane payment. I'm not paying that. And so I think that's probably where Burke is, right? You know, is it worth it for me to give up assets that this team doesn't necessarily afford to part with for an upgrade, which would be I think, obviously, the Leafs acquire Luongo. They're probably a playoff team next year. At the same time, you have Reimer and Scrivens who – you know, it's a 50-50 shot that they're going to give you league average, maybe even above league average goaltending next season, right? So
I think that's a little optimistic, but
whatever. I don't know. I feel like it's so variable, and Reimer showed that he can be an NHL starter aside from, you know, the concussion issues. And I think,
I don't think he's shown that. I still think he's a big question mark. We've only you know, whatever, 30, 35 games of starting goaltender material out of Reimer. The rest of it have been scrambled brains and scrambled goaltending.
I think he's shown that the potential is there. So I'm okay with, you know, risking that. And again, you look at sort of, like, did anyone think Mike Smith was going to have that season? Actually, what would be interesting is if Florida, you know, they re-upped Clemenson, so maybe they want to part with Jose Theodore. Maybe they want to roll Markstrom Clemenson. I don't know. Or maybe they get Luongo. I think that would be the ideal situation here, is that maybe someone else gets Luongo and they have an extra goalie that's a little bit past his prime and they want to part with him and the Leafs can sort of scoop him up. But I think the sort of – see, I don't know if that's even that my number one priority, because I don't know if anything necessarily needs to be done. What I would like to see, a trade for either a number one center. Obviously, that's a crazy expectation. Or another top four defenseman. I think those are the two biggest – issues that we can't 100% cannot fix internally. You know, I look at, okay, maybe Reimer and Scrivens can give us, between the two of them, league average goaltending. I'd say that is much more likely than anyone on this roster delivering top four defense or number one center production, right?
Actually, I would agree with that. Yeah, that's fair. Although, actually, well, no, sorry, I agree with half of that. I agree, no one's going to fill a top center role. However, I do think that there's a potential for our defense to come, you know, to come up with a top four defender. I think Lyles could bounce back. I think Jake Gardner could have a good season. He might be tired from playing so late. I mean, he played what last year? I don't know. It was like 100 games or something.
It was like 90 something.
Yeah, but just ridiculous. But I mean, one thing that I think is interesting about the Leafs defense corps is that I don't see a huge drop off after the top four. Like, people talk about the top four a lot, but, you know, there are potentially a couple good, you know, guys stepping into the bottom pair.
Yeah. You know? Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, Corbin and Holzer, I think, could step in and surprise a lot of people next season. From all accounts, his time, like, obviously, you know, we can't put too much stock in sort of AHL success, but from all accounts, the dude played tough, steady minutes throughout the playoffs and the regular season in the AHL. And from the sounds of it, it seems as though, you know, when Burke talks about these things, it seems as though he feels that they do have an internal solution for that issue. So if that's what we're assuming, that, you know, one of Blacker or Holes or, you know, Lyles or Gardner is going to be that top four, and then if Pusher was down, then sure. So then the number one pressing need becomes a number one center or a 2A. You know, if we could clone Mikhail Grabowski, if we could pry Michael Backlund or Joe Pavelski or one of those guys out of their teams, I think that would be just as good. Hmm. But I don't know if we have the assets to do that.
Well, we do, but it might just shoot ourselves in the foot. You know, I would say that Burke is in the same position he's been in for the past, I don't know, 4 years, in that he's faced with a team that could conceivably take off and make the playoffs. And at the same time, they could also fail and be just as bad, if not worse, than they were this year. You know, I mean, as it is right now, he's probably marginally improved his team by removing Gustavsson, Armstrong, and Shen, and then adding...
J-Rosell's gone.
Okay, all right, well...
And Joey Crabbe's gone.
Joey Crabbe was a serviceable fourth-line guy, whatever. But I think that Brian Burke has to make this judgment call whether or not his team is ready to sell assets to get something now. And the thing is, I'm not convinced they are, you know? Well, I don't think anyone is.
I think it depends on what your now is. If it's similar to what we just did with the Shen Van Riemsdyk deal, obviously, great. If he's packaging assets to get Joe Thornton, then I'm not so happy with that.
Sure. Sure.
I think if you add Roberto Luongo and a 2A or another potentially number one center, I think that you go a really long way to making this team infinitely better, much, much better than it was last season.
Well, can't argue with that.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you add a number one center and an elite goaltender to any team and they're going to be better. But I think that there's not a lot of fixes that need to sort of happen. I mean, you look at other teams and it's like, wow, well, where are they going to get a young player or a young this or a young that? And
it's not a lot of fixes. It's just the big fix. It's like, oh, there's nothing wrong with this house. You should buy it. Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Well, actually, there's just one problem. The whole foundation's cracked.
Yeah.
You know, like
the car just needs a new transmission.
Sure. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Apart from that, great car.
What do you feel about missing out on Justin Schultz? Are you upset? You know, is the agreement that he sucks now or?
Well, of course he has to suck. No, you know what? It's a bummer. And it's a great coup for the Oilers because, of course, they've been drafting nothing but super talented forwards for a while. And now all of a sudden they've got a young defender to boot. So good for them.
How lucky can Tambellini get?
Yeah, no kidding. Eh? He literally just fell into his lap.
And a top and just happens to go UFA.
It's Tambo, though. He'll find a way to screw it up.
That's true. I just can't wait to see what their cap's going to look like when they have to re-sign Hall, Nugent Hopkins, Yakupov, Everly, Gagne.
Oh, they are going to lose them all. Oh, yeah.
I just think someone's going to offer sheet one of them. How do you not?
Oh, it's going to be a big, hairy mess. It's going to be... I bet you it's going to be worse than in Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
When they lost Versteeg, had to cough up Campbell.
Upland.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
They haven't really won anything. And I think we should talk about how awesome Matt Sundin is for 5 minutes.
All right, okay. I guess we can do it. There's always time for talking about how awesome Matt Sundin is. I really think that this was just a gimme. I mean, anyone who thought he wasn't a first ballot a Hall of Famer is an idiot. Like, he won how many gold medals? I think 4 gold medals. Okay,
he won 1 gold medal.
Oh, sorry, just kidding. He won 4 medals, maybe. That's what I'm thinking.
He won a few world championships, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, I guess I'm lumping in the world championships with the Olympics. But anyway, okay, so he won a pile of international medals. Okay, yeah, so fine. He never won a cup. But, I mean, you know, the man had an entire franchise on his back for well over a decade.
Yeah.
And... First European captain, highest scoring player from Sweden, although not the best. I would put Lidstrom, you know, I would say Lidstrom is the best, but, you know, like it's just a shoo-in.
Right. Well, I think, yeah, I mean, he was a first European drafted first overall, you know, point per game player throughout his career, you know, 17, I think he scored at least 20 goals in his first 17 seasons. Only he and Marcel Dion are the only two NHL players to do that. And a lot of that during, you know, the dead puck era where there weren't a lot of scorers like that. Big bodied centerman, captain of one of the most illustrious teams in the NHL, you know, did a lot of it without a supporting cast, all his stuff away from the rink. Yeah, I think that when you're looking for sort of guys you want in the Hall of Fame, it's pretty hard to look over this guy. It's like, you know, how many Brandon Shanahan-like players are there in the Hall of Fame?
Well, there's a few. Not many.
Well, you know, as far as I'm saying, the archetype of a player that Brendan Shanahan is, there's, you know, Sundin has that sort of, that it's the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's not the Hockey Hall of really good players. You know, he has that sort of those extra things that sort of add to an impressive resume, right?
I don't like I don't like that kind of distinction. You know, it's like, well, he's famous, we should be in.
No. The Hall of Fame clearly looks on things outside of specific goals and points and totals and things like that, right? You know, international success matters.
Sure.
Being the first European drafted overall, being the captain of a franchise, you know, success on every stage that he's sort of played on. I think those things matter, you know, not just as much, obviously, but I think they increase when you look at his statistics, right? He's 21st overall ever in goals scored and just a prolific player. And so, like you said, it was pretty much a no-brainer. And I think people sort of saying, oh, he's from Toronto and that's why he got in. It's sort of missing the point, right?
You know what? Actually, I was surprised about Shanny getting the cold shoulder over Pavel Bure.
Well, Bure's been waiting a long time, right?
Sure he has. But, I mean... Okay, personally, okay, this is my own bias, but I really value longevity. People say, but he was so great, you know, even if it was for a short time. But, you know, nuts to that. I mean, like, I think it's much better to be a very, very, very good player than it is to be a great one for just for a very short period, right?
Well, but I also don't think that injuries should, you know, prevent you from making it, right?
I think they should.
Well, no, I think if you've got the numbers to back it up, right?
I suppose. I guess I was still surprised Shanny didn't get the nod. Who else was – okay, sorry. It was Sandin, Bure.
Oates and Sakic.
And Sakic. Well, Oates and Sakic are pretty tough to argue with.
Pretty good class.
Yeah. Actually, I think – who was it? I think it might have been Dangle. He put up a post pointing out that this was one of the highest scoring class of inductees in a really long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, we love Matt Sundin.
Yeah, I don't think it's possible to do him justice in a podcast, but we tried.
All right. Well, I guess we'll call it there. You have a good one, man.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, bye.
Bye.